When you're looking for a new computer or need help with one you already own, call 231-8000 and Madison Computer Works will get things up and running for you. Madison Computer Works, computers that work for you.
I want to thank all the labor unions here in Dane County that help keep SlysOffice.com up and going so you keep up to date. Whether it be the Madison Firefighters, Local 311, or the Madison Teamsters, Local 695, or our friends at Madison Teachers Incorporated. These are some of the most active local unions who organize, and constantly stand up for workers. Thank you from SlysOffice.com. Welcome to another podcast at SlysOffice.com, brought to you by our friends at Madison Computer Works. Joining us now, John Nichols from the Capital Times and the Nation. Well, not much going on, so I really had to look long and hard to find something to talk about, but we'll use this piece from CBS as a setup.
What they've done is abuse.
The long-planned meeting lasted about 3 minutes and ended with a presidential brush-off.
To watch what happened in the White House would make your jaw drop.
Congressional sources say the president walked into the cabinet room 15 minutes late and didn't shake hands or sit down. He accused House Speaker Nancy Pelosi of saying something terrible about him and left.
He just took a pass. And it just makes me wonder why he did that.
President Trump says it was this comment this morning that set him off.
And we believe that the president of the United States is engaged in a cover-up.
Easily, he took to the Rose Garden ones. To vent his frustration.
And instead of walking in happily into a meeting, I walk in to look at people that had just said that I was doing a cover-up. I don't do cover-ups.
It's a loaded term, reminiscent of Watergate.
And you're maintaining that you had no knowledge of the cover-up?
I had no part in any cover-up.
In this case, Democrats say cover-up refers to White House aides stonewalling on subpoenas and ignoring hearings.
It simply cannot be the case that the executive branch gets to decide what witnesses will appear, what documents they'll agree to produce.
Today's walkout may not have been the first.
When Leader Pelosi said she didn't agree with the wall, he just walked out.
But infrastructure is one of the few areas where they do have common ground.
Maybe it was lack of confidence on his part that he really couldn't match the greatness of the challenge that we have. In any event, I pray for the President of the United States.
The president said Democrats can't investigate and legislate, that they have to choose. Democrats argue the real reason he walked out is because he knows he can't sell his own party on a $2 trillion infrastructure package. And so he's looking, Major, they say, for a way out.
Nancy Cordes, thanks so much.
Of course, they forget to put in the most important line from that day where he said he wasn't going to do his job. And John, you have been far more affirmative about using impeachment. And I frankly have not been against it. I've been ambivalent about it because I understand the circumstance in the Senate. I really have been very sort of, I don't know, we'll see. When that moment happened, I had a very clear indication that the man actually gave the Democrats a great opening, and I actually was angry. I thought, oh, there's a bridge that's going to fall down somewhere. This man isn't doing his job.
Correct. And the interesting thing is, well, let's take that apart on a whole bunch of levels, right? You know, it's the Trump going into that meeting 15 minutes late with a clearly prepared announcement, right? And it wasn't that Pelosi or Schumer said anything. You notice it in the subtlety of Trump's language when he's talking about it, he said, I saw people who had accused me of cover, right? So he just like walked in, oh, Pelosi and Schumer are here. You know, and so right off the bat, it wasn't anything they said. They didn't come into the meeting saying, you know, we accuse you of a cover-up or something like that. They came into the meeting to talk about infrastructure, about doing what needs to be done. And Trump clearly saw that as a point where, you know, he's gonna walk out, right? He's going to make this big show. And he positions the work of the presidency versus the work of Congress. And Congress, a big part of Congress's job is oversight, right? And I think a lot of Americans may not fully recognize why oversight is so important for Congress. It isn't just to pick on the president, right? It isn't just to you know, like give the president a hard time. Oversight is directly related to the budget, to what we do internationally, right up to and including war. The Congress oversees the president, checks and balances the president in order to make sure that the actions of whoever's in that office, you know, relate to the needs of the American people. It's not just politics. There's something much deeper going on here. And every previous president who's gotten in trouble with Congress has understood that. And just to give you, you know, a quick refresher here, Bill Clinton used his impeachment period to get things done. The fascinating thing about Bill Clinton, and I disagree with some of what he did, but the fascinating thing about Bill Clinton was he's like, oh, these Republicans are out to get me. That doesn't look very good for them. Maybe it doesn't look so good for me. I'm going to propose things, find ways to work with Republicans, because that will make me look good, right? I'll be the guy doing things and getting things done.
Well, and for all his flaws, I do think he was a serious president.
Well, he was, but you understand,
right?
He was smart.
Yeah, but I don't think this guy's a serious president. I think he's playing one.
But let me finish the concept here. It was smart for his presidency. It was smart for the country, right? He was trying to get things done. Richard Nixon, do you know that the massive overhauls of government and a lot of good things happened
right
during Nixon's impeachment? And the final thing I'll just emphasize to you here is that proves your point when you say he's given Democrats an opening. It is that it isn't just what Trump has done, the obstruction and all the other stuff. It is the notion that he is not willing to accept oversight. He's not willing to work with and function in this setting. That is a very attractive argument for impeachment.
There was an example of a former president who behaved in the way that Donald Trump is behaving, and his name was Andrew Johnson.
Yes, and Andrew Johnson should have been impeached and removed from office. It's an important thing to understand. He was impeached. This is Johnson and Clinton are the two unique figures who were impeached by the Congress. You know, in the case of, I'm sorry, Johnson and Clinton, but Clinton was easily cleared by the Senate. It wasn't a big thing. Johnson, it was a very close call. He almost went down, and he should have gone down because what he was doing as regards Reconstruction, as regards the playout of the Civil War, frankly doomed this country to a century of, you know, unresolved.
Yes, but the Republican senator that voted against impeachment ended up in the book Profiles in Courage.
Well, he's wrong. He did the wrong thing, and he doesn't belong there. You know, this is not a debatable point.
I'm just saying he ended up in Profiles in Courage.
Yeah, but you know what? Profiles in Courage was written roughly 60 years ago. So we evolve as a people. We understand history better over time. And that was not a profile in courage. That was a compromise with that which did not deserve consideration.
All right.
Now, but here, let me just, one final thought on this Johnson thing. Jamie Raskin, the very good member of the House Judiciary Committee, says that there's always perils with impeachment, but the Johnson case reminds us that there are perils with not impeaching as well. And that's just the point I would want to make, is that at this point, not impeaching Trump locks in certain behaviors. It basically says the president can do certain
things. Well, I would say yesterday when the president essentially let the dogs loose on the Democrats and the Department of Justice to investigate the investigators,
yep.
I think there's sort of evidence that there's a crime going on currently.
But one final thing on that, if we just can. You know, his question is like, who got this? Who caused this investigation to start? Right? It's interesting if they actually like trace it down. You know what the answer is going to be? Donald Trump's ass.
Yes.
You know, he did things which any reasonable law enforcement agency would seek to investigate.
All right. Here is former CIA staff director Jeremy Bash.
Well, I think the speaker makes a good point, Brian. I mean, our presidents swear an oath. It's the only oath delineated in our Constitution. And presidents are required to state that they will faithfully execute the duties of the office. Now, if the president wants to stand there in the Rose Garden in front of the Congress and the American people and say, I'm not going to be president, I'm not going to execute my responsibilities, it's a form of auto impeachment. I think in some ways the president has impeached himself. He's removing himself from the duties of the office. And in fact, I think Speaker Pelosi is right to point out that if they can't work with a president, not much work is going to get done.
And Jeremy, on these various investigations, do you think the president understands the delineations between the branches of government?
Well, look, I think, you know, he's in a tiff right now with the Article I branch, Congress, but it's really the Article III branch, the judiciary, which is going to cause him the most trouble. We saw earlier in the week a ruling by a district court judge in the District of Columbia, and today a ruling by a district court judge in New York. Both of those cases will quickly be appealed, but in both cases, the judges ruled against the president and said that documents did have to be produced about the president's finances to Congress. So the judiciary is going to be closing in on the president, maybe even faster than Congress will.
I love that. Auto impeachment.
Yeah, I like auto impeachment. I also like that this is a unique period here where people are starting to correctly refer to the branches of government, Article 1, Article 2, Article 3, and to clarify that the founders intended the Congress to be the first player because it was closest to the people. And that's an appropriate thing. The president was to be secondary to the Congress. The courts were considered, you know, again, more usually an observer, right, and a interpreter, not an entity that would be called to, in and of itself, check and balance. But obviously that's evolved over time. Here's the interesting thing. Mark my words. Hold them up to me and tell me I was wrong if it turned out to be wrong. My bet is that the history of this era will be a book about John Roberts. And the book about John Roberts will tell the story of how, at a critical point in the country's history, when everything seemed to be falling apart, John Roberts meticulously pulled together a Supreme Court majority, probably, not certainly, but probably a full majority, perhaps all the justices, to slap down presidential abuses with a profoundly authoritative ruling. And it will be, people will then, and I'm not the biggest John Roberts fan, I'm not from Citizens United, all sorts of things. If I'm right about this, it will stand with what Earl Warren did on Brown v. Board of Education, what the Supreme Court did during the Nixon, in the Nixon era, what the Supreme Court has done at certain times. It is that at a point where the country is very torn, the court recognizes the need to come down very decisively. If I'm right about that, then Trump faces the biggest challenge of all. He may not be impeached, but he may be slapped down so thoroughly that if he doesn't follow the orders of the courts, then he will either be impeached necessarily and removed, or he and those senators who stand by him face the potential of a sweeping defeat in the 2020 election.
Have you seen this cover of the New Yorker, the new one, the drawing of Donald Trump sitting in a shoeshine chair and Lindsey Graham and Mitch McConnell and William Barr shining his shoes?
It's
a shine on.
It's tragic. And yet, this is the interesting thing. And I'll just remind you and our friend Sean Duffy of...
You were often mentioned in the same sentence.
Yeah, well, yeah. of a name from the 1970s, Charles Sandeman. Charles Sandman was a congressman from New Jersey who was an ardent defender of Richard Nixon, went down to the end defending Richard Nixon. Charles Sandman thought that that was going to make him a epic figure, so much so that he ended up getting himself nominated for governor of New Jersey in 1973 in the midst of, you know, all the controversies around Watergate. He was overwhelmingly defeated. The next year, he continued his defenses of Nixon, and he was defeated for his congressional seat and lost to history, right? He represented one of the most conservative districts in New Jersey. He was in a state where, you know, there was a strong conservative base in those days. I know it's hard to imagine. And it all came apart. When I watch Sean Duffy on Chris Cuomo's show mounting ever more absurd defenses of Donald Trump, and whatever Donald Trump does is good. Whatever anybody else does is critical of him is bad. Just this sort of absurd, you know, over-the-top, deeply dishonest defenses. I see Charles Sandman.
Well, evidently, F. James Sensenbrenner seems to think his name is Goofy because that's what he calls him. Of course, that's unofficial. We'll take a break and be back with more on SliceOffice.com with John Nichols.
Similar to a well-tuned automobile, a guitar requires the same level of attention to perform at its very best. No matter how expensive your guitar may be, we will treat you and your instrument with the utmost respect. Call 920-723-1733 or visit jeffsguitar.com. Jeff's Guitar Clinic in Fort Atkinson. We love guitars.
We're back at SliceOffice.com, brought to you by our friends at Madison Teachers Incorporated, Madison Firefighters, Local 311, and Madison Teamsters, Local 695, as well as our friends at Jeff's Guitar Clinic in Fort Atkinson. All right, so this is noted historian and someone who I don't always agree with, but I think he has something interesting to say here, John Meacham.
Like this, we're so fortunate to be joined by the Pulitzer Prize-winning author and presidential historian John Meacham. Notably, he is the co-author of a recent book called Impeachment and American History. John, I am told by a reliable source you have arrived tonight with a quote from one George Mason.
And who else I would submit would bring this to you? Of a Wednesday, and I know that's exciting for you and everybody else. George Mason, in the Constitutional Convention, said, "Who shall be above justice?" And the last person on earth who can be above justice is the person who has the capacity to do the most extensive injustice. It was a triumvirate debate about impeachment in the beginning between James Madison and Edmund Randolph and George Mason, really trying to figure out what would, in the Republican system of checks and balances, what would the impeachment function be? And it's inherently political, as we've discussed. It's been used for political purposes through the years. But one of the things that came to a head today, I think, particularly with the case where the President of the United States walks out of a meeting with those who are empowered under the Constitution under Article 1 and says, "I'm not going to work with you." At some point, you have to begin to seriously consider, if you are those Article 1 folks, to what extent is the political situation such that you have a constitutional duty to fulfill what was debated and decided upon between those founders so long ago. And it strikes me, and it's easy for me to say, I don't have to face the voters, but it strikes me that if I were a member of the House of Representatives right now, I would be inclined to proceed, at least to have hearings on impeachment, given that the president, we have evidence of attempted obstruction, and we also have the political box checked, which is he's not, in fact, he's saying he's not going to do his job.
So if I'm not mistaken, don't conservatives hold George Mason in great reverence?
Yeah.
Isn't George Mason University kind of considered a
relatively conservative
university? Right.
But kind of conservative leaning. And
yeah.
And Mason was an imperfect figure on many grounds. But I'm enjoying this period very much because, you know, I wrote a history of impeachment better part of 15 years ago. And I first used the George Mason quote obviously in that book. But first used the George Mason quote in regard to Donald Trump after Mark Pocan brought up impeachment on the floor of the House, I believe in February of 2017. So it's very good that John Meacham is catching up with things and starting to pay attention, as and these other people.
Well, he wrote a book too, John.
No, but what I'm saying is I'm enjoying this moment as people who have not always paid as much attention as they should to the constitutional crisis. And this constitutional crisis is not a new one. This constitutional crisis extends back decades, and it is one where we have treated impeachment as a fetish or as some sort of third rail. We have not treated it in the way that, frankly, George Mason intended. And the interesting thing is,
I think it's because the Republicans sort of abused the process back in the late 90s.
The Republicans, but it even goes back there. The Democrats did not choose to impeach on Iran-Contra. They should have. And they ended up being played on it because not only wasn't anybody held to account, not only did Bush, the father, win the 1988 election, they then went around pardoning everybody, right? And so one of the great lessons of
yes, and William Barr is part of that story, too.
Totally a part of it. And so the way to understand it is this. Our Republican friends read the Constitution as a tool that, to their mind, exists solely to empower them, right? To make it easier for them to do the things they want to do and say no to people that want to do something else. They don't read it fully. And if you read it fully, what you recognize is that impeaching a president is a pretty healthy thing to do. On balance, it's not a bad idea. And I don't say for what reason. I'm just saying impeachment's not a bad thing. Impeachment is the way that when a president gets out of line, be it a Democrat or Republican, conservative or liberal, the Congress says, hey, hold it. You can't do that. And the treatment of it as some sort of fetish, right, as some sort of, you know, taboo, is a very unhealthy thing for keeping the presidency in check. And as a result, Donald Trump inherited a presidency that was imperial. He inherited a presidency with dramatically too much power, with dramatically too few constraints on it. A presidency that could launch us into wars without declaring war. A presidency that could attach, quote-unquote, signing statements to laws saying, well, here's the part of the law I'm not going to obey. A presidency that just had enormous ability to abuse power. And the moment we've gotten to extends from all of that. The question is, will members of Congress now step up and recognize that there has to be a pushback? And if the Senate chooses not to respect that, well, that's the Senate's choice. But for members of the House, this shouldn't be a debatable point. It shouldn't be a complicated thing. They should have an inquiry first.
All right, here's Nancy Pelosi.
The inquiry is to build the argument for it.
Here's Nancy Pelosi.
The White House is just crying out for impeachment. That's why he flipped yesterday. The president's behavior in terms of his obstruction of justice, the things that he is doing, it's very clear. It's in plain sight. It cannot be denied. Ignoring subpoenas, obstruction of justice. Yes, these could be impeachable offenses.
The whole Democrat Party is very messed up. They have never recovered from the great election of 2016, an election that I think you folks liked very much, right? Well, Nancy Pelosi was not happy about it, and she is a mess. We went through 2 years of Bob Mueller with 18 people that hated Donald Trump. Now, all of a sudden, we continue to go down this path. I don't think people are going to stand for it.
The swipes became even more personal as each questioned the other's temperament and fitness to lead.
I pray for the President of the United States. I wish that his family or his administration or his staff would have an intervention for the good of the country. If you don't stop honoring your oath of office, I can't work with you. That's basically what he's saying. Maybe he wants to take a leave of absence. I don't know. I actually ardently pray for the president.
It was sad when I watched Nancy all moving, the movement and the hands and the craziness. And I watched it. That's, by the way, a person that's got some problems.
Then, in the midst of all that, Trump tossed out this.
I'm an extremely stable genius.
The speaker responded quickly, and we quote, "When the extremely stable genius starts acting more presidential, I'll be happy to work with him on infrastructure, trade, and other issues."
Hard to beat.
It is an amazing television series that's carrying out in all of our living rooms.
Well, and the interesting thing is this. Also, do you make note of the fact that apparently yesterday at some point Trump retweeted a doctored video of Pelosi?
Yes.
Yeah. And
I thought that was classy.
Well, no, but it's the interesting question of, was that the video he was looking at where he thought she was, like, looking unstable? Does he know, perhaps, that the person he's dealing with, whether you like her or not, is considered to be one of the most able legislative leaders of modern times, somebody who's been able to hold her caucus, which is actually very diverse, in place despite some incredible, you know, buffeting from all sides. Person who, by the way, got the Affordable Care Act passed. Person who got the stimulus passed, which we're still in many ways surfing on a decade later. You know, Pelosi's not a fool. I have many criticisms of her. I am not somebody who's going to line up and say, oh, she's perfect. I agree with her. I disagree with her on a whole bunch of things. I think the impeachment should have begun a long time ago. But yeah, this notion that Trump thinks he's going to go head-to-head with her and somehow she's going to come out the villain? No, I disagree. I think that he's taking a legislative strategist who was not always the most popular figure, and he is turning her into a very, very popular figure who, frankly, you know, if he turns attention to her and she starts speaking to the country on a regular basis, and it really is Pelosi versus Trump, Pelosi's going to win that debate.
Here is one more clip of the president.
They don't feel they can win the election, so they're trying to do the 1,000 stabs. Keep stabbing. Let's have a financial. And if you look for $40 million, I would think, seriously, that Bob Mueller and his group of 18 killers have gone over my taxes. They've gone over my financial statements to a level that nobody has gone over them before. And they were not discussed, even. They weren't even discussed or brought up. I have great statements.
By the way, there was not an episode of The Rifleman today. He was meeting with a group of visiting farmers.
Fabulous.
Oh, love Brian Williams.
18 killers.
Oh, but I mean, love that added touch from Brian Williams. He was not
Brian Williams.
Because Trump was surrounded by these guys with cowboy hats as he sailed.
Yeah, I know. And not all of them looked as comfortable as they should.
No, they didn't look comfortable at all.
Yeah, they're all brought in there, right?
But he says he has great statements. Well, yeah. If Donald Trump has great statements, he sure is spending a lot of money and effort to keep them private.
Well, I mean, this is
great statements.
This is where, again, somebody like our dear friend Sean Duffy comes out looking like one of the most comic figures in the, you know, really in the history of humanity. He's saying, well, Nancy Pelosi's blowing this thing all up. And that was a line from Duffy. Or, you know, Robert Mueller, you know, he cleared Trump. Trump fully, in Duffy's amazing performance the other night with Chris Cuomo, he said Trump fully cooperated. You know, Trump is completely cooperating.
This is
sort of like, really?
This is a man who ran around naked on The Real World on MTV and is a lumberjack. Okay.
Yeah, but I think he would get kicked off The Real World for this kind of performance. I mean, there's a point at which our Republican friends would be wise to imagine that if they can't do their constitutional duty, maybe they should just be quiet. You know, like just sort of work on some other project.
Okay, you know? Here's one more clip that you've got to hear. I sure had a lot of fun putting this all together today. Here is one more of Trump and his staff.
Kellyanne, what was my temperament yesterday?
Very calm, no temper tantrum. Mr. President, why would you have to raise your voice?
You were very calm and you were very direct.
What was my attitude yesterday at the meeting?
Mercy's right. Kellyanne's right. You were very calm.
What was my tone yesterday at the meeting?
Very calm. I've seen both, and this was definitely not angry or ranting. Very calm and straightforward.
Good.
Well, at least Sarah Sanders was a little truthful.
Yeah, she was like actually more honest than the rest, better than Kellyanne. But you know what's interesting is I'm quite sure that King George III used to call his viscounts and folks like that for similar performances, right? Am I sane? Why, yes, you are, sir. Am I delusional? Well, no, of course not.
Of course not.
Do the American colonies, revere me as their, like, divinely chosen leader? Well, yes, you should, sir. The tragedy of that performance is that it's not the sycophantic people who are being paid, literally, to serve this guy. You know, they're staffers. That's what they do. It's that Trump actually thinks, this is how he's going to vet himself, right? And remember, Trump is the guy who brought the cameras in to his sit-down with Pelosi and Schumer in December. We should be very conscious of the degeneration here. That at that point, Trump thought he could sit with Pelosi and Schumer and, wow the American people, maybe even wow them. Some months later, he doesn't think that anymore. Trump didn't have to ask his staff whether he was calm. He could have the cameras in there,
right,
as he did in December. He didn't choose to do so because this is a temper tantrum.
Well, according to Steny Hoyer, it was kind of dark. The windows were, the shades were drawn.
Well, they probably didn't want any camera shooting right from outside.
Okay, we got to wrap it up. Let me, as in summation, give me a brief description, not what you want to happen, but what you think's going to happen over the next month.
Oh, good. Well, that's a terrible thing to do to anybody at this point because it always.
Well, I'm a terrible person, so I just did it.
Well established. I am a believer in impeachment. I think it's a good thing. I think that support for impeachment will grow. I think that Justin Amash's principled stance as a Republican has caused a number of Democrats to think, wow, we really, if a Republican from, Western Michigan can step up, maybe we could too.
Yeah, we didn't even get to Justin Amash.
Yeah, and he did a great job. And so I think you're going to see actual support for impeachment grow, the numbers, but I think Pelosi will continue to hold it back. My sense is that the court rulings of the last few days have given a great hope for the Pelosi wing that does not want to do impeachment. And so my sense is that she and Hoyer and others will hold it back, that Nadler and others will accept that and do basically, quote-unquote, impeachment by another name. They will have the inquiry but not call it such. And they will wait for court rulings, which, and I do think, as I said before, the story of this period will very likely be I shouldn't say very likely. This is where my hope comes in. My hope is the story of this period will be the courts stepping up in such a major way that it clarifies the circumstance. And that's the next month. And at the end of that, period, if the courts have stepped up, then we'll really be in that so-called classic constitutional crisis moment where does Trump do as the courts have said? Does he choose not to? If he chooses not to, then he has done a full Nixon, and he will be impeached.
John Nichols from the Capital Times and The Nation. Thanks for coming to SliceOffice.com.
SliceOffice.com.
Thanks a million.
Bye-bye.